From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. Hundreds of people wasted their time, pardon me, protested flights. And hundreds of flights were delayed after the protest blocked SR 518 to SeaTac. Crazy, right? The amount of time that people waste. I mean, they just stand there blocking everybody else's good time.
I got to tell you, man, I don't know what I'd do if I was in if I was trying to make a flight.
Well, what, you want to do a little dad voice here?
What would you do? Hey! I'd be out the window. I'd be like, listen, guys, I'm with you. Sure. Feed the hungry. Whatever. From the beach to the umbrellas. I don't care. Well, come on. Let's go. I got a kid here. Do you know my daughter was flying to New York yesterday and got out just before this started?
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you cannot imagine the upheaval. And I guess you're right. They're wasting their time. But, man, I've never seen a more effective coast-to-coast network coverage.
I mean, we're also going to be talking about the current Google workers who are protesting the company's contracts with the Israeli military, the homeless problem, we got a homeless youth program, we got all kinds of stuff. But the thing about the protesters that I just wanted to start off with, is there anything more awkward than that circumstance? Meaning that if I'm walking down the street and mm-hmm. someone is walking in my lane, meaning that they are coming right at me, I am the person who steps out of the way.
Sure,
right?
That's civility.
That's a little bit of civility.
Yeah.
These people are exercising what can only be equated to kind of the social, at the social level, it's you just walking right into each other. Do you know what I mean? not getting out of the way.
And when you try to sidestep, they step with you.
Exactly.
To continue to block your way.
So they, it's about 50 pro-Palestinian protesters. They were part of the demonstration that was calling for the United States to stop providing money to Israel, as if that's going to happen. It was a rush for the light rail when arriving passengers realized they couldn't be picked up by a car. A lot of people were just kind of sitting there waiting. Laura, do we have any audio, usable audio from this? Or is it just kind of them all yelling, hey, hey, ho, ho, so on and so forth? The problem with a lot of the anti-Israel protests that are occurring right now is they say cut funding, right? It's divest, boycott, so on and so forth.
Yeah, we're dropping sandwiches and bombs.
Right, exactly. But the problem is, let us just say, in a hypothetical world that the United States stops giving Israel money, Israel has a lot of money that they can spend. So regardless of whether or not the funding ceases immediately,
right,
they're going to continue to burn through whatever resources that they have. Moreover, I think the sad part about these kids is that if they focused much more on a unified message, meaning the October 7th attacks were bad, mm-hmm. and yet also Palestinian children starving to death is also bad.
Yes. Yes.
They might have a message, right?
They might have a message, but I got to tell you, I come at this from a completely, I don't know what to do point of view, because I don't know how to show support for the people who are in Gaza without being labeled as anti-Semitic.
Right. Yeah.
You know, this is a tough line to walk. I watched the protests yesterday from New York to Texas to California to Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking, okay, these are people with, they don't have malice in their hearts.
Yeah,
they got malice in their brain. Well, they're mush in their hearts. Yeah. I don't know how to, you know what I'm saying? How do you show support for humanity and realize that Israel's going to be Israel, and they're the only ally we have in the region,
mm-mm.
for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're surrounded on all sides for the last 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Against somebody who has nonstop wanted them wiped from the face of the earth. At what point, if I had the answers, I wouldn't be sitting here.
What do you mean?
I'd be home.
Well, finish that thought. At what point what? At what point does it get resolved?
At what point do you sit both down in the corner and say, look, this can no longer go on. We cannot continue to support you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Biden administration is making turns or their course correcting. Like, we need you to be a little more accountable, but maybe suggestions. Have we gone past suggestions? That's all we can do right now is make suggestions that should be a little more careful, a little more restrained in your attacks. But
let's do a little bit of the old political theory, shall we? Because we need to talk about how to solve conflict around the world and how sometimes it doesn't always work.
True.
Dialectical materialism. What does that mean? How do we apply it? And what does it mean for us in geopolitical conflict? Dialectical materialism is basically the idea that you can resolve almost any conflict through access to stuff. Does that make sense? So okay. if you remember the Vietnam War,
sure.
South Vietnam versus North Vietnam, mm-hmm. we're going to start putting stuff in South Vietnam. They're going to have Coca-Cola, Budweiser, they're going to be getting cars, so on and so
sure.
forth. Right?
A better way of life.
It was the idea that capitalism in some way could improve the living conditions of those people to the point where they no longer wanted to engage in war. That was the idea. And it doesn't often work. It didn't work in Afghanistan. Just as an example,
sure.
much of the negotiating that was going on with the Taliban's, plural, in Afghanistan was around what kind of stuff would you like? Do you want new hospitals? Do you want new roads?
Right. Infrastructure.
Infrastructure.
Clean water. What do you need? 7-Elevens?
What you have in that region of the world is theocracy. You have theocrats. And so for them, stuff doesn't really matter because the only important thing in life is being martyred and going going to be in the higher planes of existence or the ethereal planes of existence. So if you were to go to the people of Gaza and offer them stuff, roads, bridges, Coca-Cola, Burger King, whatever
sure.
it is, right, they might like that. But then Hamas as an organization, no dice, because you're not going to get to heaven on the wrong end of a Whopper. Well, you know what I mean? It's not going to happen.
God, that was so beautifully put. Yeah. We should carve that into marble somewhere. I mean, but you're right, though. I mean, they see that as that's what's wrong, is the stuff.
Stuff.
Right? It that's what poisons their true spirit and belief in the afterlife and their higher creator and yada yada.
Exactly.
Their religious beliefs.
Right. So Seattle Google workers are protesting the company's contracts with the Israeli military. If you've never heard of Project Nimbus, it's my understanding is that Nimbus is a little creature who lives on your shoulder, right?
I thought it was the broom in Harry Potter. I don't know what Project Nimbus makes zero sense to me.
Right. No, a Nimbus, or at least Project Nimbus, is the cloud computing project of the Israeli government and its military.
And Google provides that.
Yes, they
okay,
do. They
okay.
provide all the coding for that. Sam Campbell in the studio, fresh off the beat from the Google campus. What'd you run over here, Sam?
I'm breathing hard.
Where did you run?
So am I, but I've been sitting for
20. Don't they give you the Cairo car to drive around in? It's only like 6 blocks. What are you doing?
Figured I'd get the exercise.
Okay, good. All right. So, Sam, you were just down there. You want to catch your breath for a couple of few before we get to talking, or do you want to?
Well, hey, we can get to talking about it.
Yeah. So what's going on right now at the Google campus? What's the deal with all those fine people? What's a nice way I can say
tech
this?
Tech workers.
Sure. So it's tech workers and activists
okay.
who are protesting there. And just to be clear, it's across the street. It's in Lake Union Park. And they're not blocking traffic. Not like what we saw yesterday.
It's not from the cubicle to the coffee machine. It's not inside the offices.
Well, it's funny you should bring that up, actually, Spike, because one of them told me, actually, there was a protest going on in California, and apparently there's a sit-in inside one of the offices there.
Right. I mean, if they can stop the actual process of providing the service to Israel, that's more of a that's less of a protest and more of an action.
Right. Sam, based on your general demeanor right now, did you run from those people? Are you? Because you are pale.
I have been awake since 3 a.m. And
it's been a
busy day. But, you know, when I was there, I actually did speak with someone who works for Google.
Okay.
And they did not want me to record their voice because they were afraid that even an audio recording might be used to identify them.
And they feared retaliation from their employer?
And they fear retaliation for voicing their disapproval that their work as a cloud engineer could be going toward Project Nimbus. Now, when I asked specifically, do you know whether or not any work in the Seattle office is actually supporting this project? They told me, I don't know, because there has been lack of transparency, according to them, and that's part of their problem with this whole ordeal. And now they're afraid that if they, you know, even put their name on something that could be tied back to them, that they could potentially be fired.
Be retaliated against,
well,
sure.
So my guess is that the Israeli government has a private military contract with Google to provide them with these cloud services.
I think that's a fair assessment to make.
In the interest of security, it's been compartmentalized. Now, so for people who aren't familiar with the Manhattan Project, when they were developing the atomic bomb, that was where they developed the system known as compartmentalization. You only need to know on a need-to-know basis.
Right.
No, there's no crosstalk between any of these organizations, which is probably why the people over at Google are very suspicious about why there's no transparency.
Now, when I asked specifically about what the environment is like inside Google right now, I asked for examples for some kind of context so that we can understand why they say that they are afraid of being retaliated against. Of course, there was that Google worker who interrupted a tech conference in New York last month. They've been fired. And inside the company, this cloud engineer tells me that they had this town hall in February where people brought up Palestinian women during the town hall. And according to this worker, Google allegedly disabled the ability to ask questions right after that in the town hall.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. That's kind of like, you know, all of a sudden your Uncle Joe wants to start talking about Israel-Palestine at the dinner table.
You have to remind him the Packers were in the living room. Go ahead. Go watch the game. We'll bring you a plate. Right, right. And to your point about it being compartmentalized or firewalled off, I can't imagine that national security of Israel, which is what this Nimbus system is paramount to, you can't have some guy at a cubicle with a different point of view having the ability to shut down national security.
Right, which is why I asked this worker, you know, are they even taking steps to not do the work that they are assigned? And they assured me, no, they do everything they're assigned to do. However, on their personal time, they would like to be able to voice some kind of disapproval.
Sam Campbell, thank you so much for literally doing wind sprints from Lake Union all the way up here, buddy. That's got to be what? 3/4 of a mile?
It's over a mile.
Really?
All with a mile. No shoes.
All with no shoes.
It's that Elven like Nimbus spread.
He's so low to the ground.
Yeah.
He's so low to the ground. It's truly amazing. Thank you, my friend. We appreciate it. I hope you take a wonderful nap when you get home.
Second breakfast.
Speaking of napping, by the way, Democrats are fighting to keep homeless living in unsafe housing, and they claim the science of drug contamination isn't settled. This is a piece by Jason Rantz over at 770 KTTH, who, by the way, Jason was very upset that I did not do the appropriate plug for his blog yesterday on the show, because I said My Northwest, and he insists that we send people to 770 KTTH.
Are we still promoting the book as well? I want to make amends and get on the good
What's Killing America, now available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. You can get Jason Rance's analysis of What is Killing America. It's a fine book. I've read it cover to cover several times. Actually, I read it every night to my children before they go to sleep.
That's
so what's
future.
The deal with this story, Spike? What's going on with this?
Well, basically the story that Jason has put forth on KTTH, a link to mynorthwest.com. So you're both right. I love when you all can win. Jason really has an issue with the model of providing housing before,
housing first model.
The housing first model before sobriety. Jason thinks that Democrats who promote, well, let's get you off the streets and then we'll get you clean, keeps homeless living in unsafe housing. And I don't know that I agree with that perspective, that you have to, because getting clean might be the hardest thing someone ever does in their life. It can be for some people. Maybe I'm the guy that's seen it all wrong.
Really quickly, as someone, I was heavily addicted to heroin and cocaine for a decade under the influence, right? I've got 10 years, got a PhD in street level drug addiction. You can get off of heroin pretty easy in about 7 days. You just feel like you have the flu. It's uncomfortable, but it's not hard. Cocaine is uncomfortable for about 3 to 7 days. There are only certain substances out there that will kill you if you try to get off of them abruptly. High-dose benzodiazepines, meaning high-dose Valium, high-dose Xanax, or whatever that is. Or then alcohol.
Do you know where fentanyl falls into that spectrum of recovery danger? Because I think that's probably
non-existent.
Non-existent. How so? What do you mean?
Fentanyl is just an opiate.
Okay.
It's just a more powerful version of morphine. And so what you're talking about at that level is withdrawals that, you know, you call bone-chilling withdrawals, right? And that's because your body is trying to literally just push out all this garbage that you've stored over a period of time. So you're sweating. You feel sick. All these autonomic systems are just running. You're feeling like you're very nauseous because your metabolism is firing back up again. All of these can be assuaged through the miracle of modern medicine. So I would not in any way, shape, or form say that withdrawing in any way, shape, or form is the hardest thing anybody's ever had to do. Right?
I for some people it can be. I know folks who didn't make it through recovery numerous times.
Saying bye is the hardest thing to do, Spike. We both know this, right?
Sorry was the hardest word.
Sorry is the hardest word.
I guess it's a matter of how we look at, first off, reporting the news and how we look at treating the ills of society. I think that you get people off the streets, the housing first model, and then work on their recovery. Give them a safer, cleaner place to recover. And Jason's point of view is opposite of mine, but I'm sure it's more valid. He's probably done a lot more research than I have. Mine's based on my feelings. Mm-hmm. Jason's probably done some research. That's kind of what he does when he writes. But this Democrats push for homeless living and unsafe housing.
Jason does research. That's what he does when he writes. When I write, I use my feelings.
That's a pretty honest assessment, right?
What is this, Spike? You're like, I use my feelings. Jason uses research. Like, come on, buddy.
Okay. I don't like Jason's take on Democrats fighting to keep homeless living in unsafe housing. I think that's a very unproductive headline to use.
Okay.
That'd be like me saying Republicans push for the downfall of democracy to win offices.
Well, let me back up my friend Mr. Rance here for a couple of seconds, right? Because
if you can.
Because what happens in a lot of the housing that these drug addicts get put into is there is not a lot of oversight that is in there, right? And it's particularly in the tiny home villages, there's just not a lot of oversight that goes into that. The idea is exposure, right? So you live in the tiny home and then we come up and we talk to you about drugs or drug use or getting sober or whatever it is. And then we do that enough times and then eventually you decide you want to go to rehab or whatever it might be. When we look at this piece of, you know, Democrats fighting to keep homeless people living in unsafe housing, if I had to play devil's advocate for the Democrats, what I would say is that they do this because it's better to have those people in a localized place doing drugs rather than isolated on the streets where they would go and OD out in the streets, meaning their chances of survival are higher in these unsafe housing units as opposed to, I don't know, down Lake Union where Sam just ran from.
Or in the weeds, in the woods, next to the off-ramps.
Right.
That We Heart Seattle find people. You know, Kate Stone did this piece a few months ago up in Vancouver about safe places to use.
Yes.
And there's some medical research and validity to those mechanisms. I guess I'd feel better that people were using in a tiny village or a tiny little house community.
Yeah,
for the reasons you put better than I.
A lot of clinicians would suggest the same thing. It's part of the harm reduction model, and you can be against it all you want, but the idea is we would rather have someone under 30% supervision rather than no supervision.
Zero, right.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, Mickey Gomez stepping into the studio because Mr. Sunshine has the week off because he's got stuff he's got to do. But we're still going to vote whether or not to kick off Billy because because we have to vote every Tuesday and Thursday.
Sure, give the people what they want.
So if you want me to fire Billy, which I can do right now via text message because he just texted me, go ahead and text in the show at 888-973-5476. Or if you want to keep Billy, you can text us there as well. Interest in women's basketball sports growing throughout Western Washington. Why? There are no women in Western Washington, right? This is bizarre.
We truck them in.
We'll discuss when we get back right after this. Interest in women's basketball sports is growing. Not a joke. Real thing. I hate these kinds of jokes that people make against women's sports, right?
What do you mean?
Women's sports? What's that? Is that, you know what I mean?
You mean like the 14.8 million people watch the women's national championship, which is 14.7 million more than last year.
18.9, actually.
Thank you so much. By the way, Mickey Gomez in the studio. Interest in women's basketball sports is growing throughout Western Washington because Caitlin Clark and other young stars are helping to grow interest in the women's game. Now, this is going to be a great opportunity for Spike to show everybody what a proud feminist he is so he can prove to everybody his liberal credentials.
Bona fides.
Yeah. So, Mickey, what's the deets on this story?
What do you mean, what's the deets? It's women's sports. Come on. In all actuality, you know, in our household, we've always watched men's sports. But in the last couple of years, since, you know, our daughter is an athlete, we've become more active in watching women's sports. The one thing we don't watch, women's football, but we're really big into women's basketball. And it has been such a joy to, like, watch my daughter as she's watching the TV and seeing these women play sports and then to go to her games and tournaments and her feel like, Caitlin Clark or, you know, the next, I don't know, Breonna Stewart or
Sue Bird fan, I'm sure, right? Your kid coming up in Seattle?
Yeah. I mean, just going to the game. I mean, the fact that because of who she plays for, the Seattle Storm, their organizers actually came to our youth organization and said, we would love for you to make a video, a promo. So now at the games, which I don't care, Jack, I'm talking. I don't care. Now when my daughter goes to the game, she will see herself on the big screen.
That's so empowering. It opens so many doors and breaks through so many glass ceilings, not to grab 1,003 metaphors. Seattle's always been this way, though. And mm-hmm. I'm a big, you know me, Jack, I raised two girls. I raised a young woman, and I've raised now a fine young man, non-binary, who came up through girl sports. Mm-hmm. Okay. Whether it was Megan Rapinoe at the Seattle Reign.
Who?
Megan Rapinoe. Remember the little purple haired?
It's pronounced Rapinoe.
Rapinoe. My apologies to Megan Rapinoe.
Thank you.
Rapinoe.
Whoa, you actually knew that.
Actually, it was a joke between Stacey Joe Ross and I because we talk about Megan Rapinoe, a.k.a. Rapinoe, and then we would invert that when we would speak to each other. It went on for many, many months. It got funnier the more you do it. It's one of those things. The more you do it, the more you like it.
You remember when the U.S. Women's World Cup soccer team won it all, right? That was 20 years ago, somewhere in that arena, right? That's when the country turned the corner, that we could actually watch women's sports and it would be real, just it'd be sports entertainment, not just women's sports entertainment. And I love the moment that they're having in women's college basketball with Caitlin Clark being an all-time point record holder. Mm-hmm. But is it just a moment, or have we turned a corner? Is next year the numbers going to be back down to where they were a couple years ago?
I think there are a lot of new players that have an opportunity to step up next year when it comes to the games, and people are going to be excited to go and see who the next big players are going to be. My daughter is super excited, had her phone, came running into my bedroom this morning at 6 a.m. and said, Caitlin Clark is coming to Seattle. Look.
Wow.
Because they're playing the Storm on May 22nd. And
did you get tickets yet? Because I think that one's already sold out.
We've got free tickets to go. So we're excited about that because of my daughter won a raffle.
Okay, Brian always tells me, figure out a way to get into this segment and don't push off sports. So let me just think about that. Okay, childlike joy is very important to me.
I
think that it's wonderful that children experience joy when it comes to, what are we talking about?
Sports. Yeah.
And because sports is so, like, Mickey, it warms my heart that your daughter has that model. Because, like, when I was a kid, the model of coolness was musicians. It was the coolest guys on the planet were musicians, and that's just what I gravitated towards. And it taught me a lot of things, just that skill set of being in a band, playing an instrument, so on and so forth. I think that it's amazing to see now young girls in particular gravitating towards high achievement, whether it's in athletics or any other field.
And it's music.
Right, because the peripheral effects will be tremendous in their lives.
What's exciting is that it's not just the Olympics anymore.
That,
you know, it's not just that a little girl has to watch the Olympics to see another person who may look like her do an event and win. And now we're talking like everyday sports now, you know, and this is really cool. I don't think women's sports is having a moment. I think we've always been there. We've always been incredible athletes. It's just that now companies are going, ooh, dollar signs, ooh, record breaking, ooh, let's put this on primetime and see if people will watch. Oh my God, people watch.
There's money in women's sports. That's when the male driven marketing machines cared. Seriously. I mean, that's true, right? Remember when the Sonics left Seattle? Jack, you weren't here yet. When the Sonics left Seattle, a group of women in Seattle rallied business leaders to make sure that the Seattle Storm didn't leave town.
And they almost did.
Right, and they kept that anchor for women's sports. And now Seattle is the most valuable WNBA franchise in the league.
Almost $200 million? Isn't that what the Seattle Storm is worth? Almost.
And our women's pro soccer team in Seattle is the model for America to how to market a team to a city. Because, you know, it's great that we as a culture now are realizing that these ladies have mad skills and that people will actually watch. But until the dollars showed up, The guys who pull the strings and push the buttons would not care.
I like money, too. I think that money is great.
I can make money on these ladies?
Money is
put them on.
A great thing for people and local businesses. I'm really trying here, Spike.
I know, brother. I appreciate it, man.
I mean, I think G and I were talking about it earlier that, you know, somebody like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and all those other amazing athletes who just got drafted into the WNBA are only making, like, what, $76,000 a year?
That's there it is. Yeah, that's the thing.
Really?
Yeah, because the league can't generate the kind of numbers that the NBA generates to pay out the salaries to the players. So a lot of these athletes who are professional women's athletes in different sports don't make a decent living.
Which is why some women athletes go overseas to make the larger dollar signs, because in those...
Play in Spain, play in wherever it may be, yeah. Mm-hmm. They have to do it as second jobs. They can't take the offseason off to recover or train or hone their game. They got to go earn more money overseas.
Fun piece of trivia. You guys remember Allen Iverson?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Do you guys know what he did in the latter half of his career after basketball?
I don't.
He got an offer from a random league in Turkey to go play soccer for them.
Soccer?
Yeah, and they were paying him, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Sold tickets?
Because he was also flat broke. Yeah, no, but the reason that he signed the contract is because they said, we'll give you $1 million for every goal that you score. And Allen Iverson was like, of course I can do that. I'm 40-something years old. I can play soccer.
Oh, no.
Did not do it. Yes, not a single one.
Base salary at all, or was it all incentive driven?
He was making a lot of money doing it, just showing up. But in terms of Allen Iverson's soccer skills, they don't exactly translate over, right? Mickey Gomez, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Why don't you like sports?
Sports is a thing which people engage in and add comprehensive argument, insert it here. And thus, I am not a fan of sports. Thank you, Mickey Gomez. We appreciate
it. You caught the music bug.
Yeah.
No, you remind me, my son reminds me a lot of you.
Thank you.
So when I look at you and I give you that endearing look, that's me seeing my son Javier.
Well, I mean,
in you.
You take me to like a yoga conference, then you'll see the sports brain light
engaged,
up in my mind.
Yeah.
Where I'm going, oh man, look at that mermaid. That is so sick.
You give me hope, Jack Stein. Yeah. You give me hope.
Exactly. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Mr. O'Neill's daughter, eldest, is getting proposed to, and she doesn't listen to the show, so
she's out of town. And today.
She's going to be getting, Coney Island, from what I hear tell.
Yeah.
And Spike wants to tell the story, because it's a beautiful story of heirlooms and the refurbishing of different
traditions
items.
Tradition. Yeah.
And Spike's going to cry because he's got too much estrogen in his body. Got to take blockers for that, buddy, I do.
I'm going to be me.
We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. It's one of the best albums ever made. Are you familiar with this, Spike? Daft Punk? You're not familiar with it?
No, I know who. They're the guys with the helmets, right?
They're the guy with the helmets.
I'm aware of them, but
Frenchmen,
not their music. Yeah.
Don't speak a word of English.
No kidding?
Yeah, this record is so... Well, I don't know. They might speak English. I don't know.
Probably. You know what's funny?
What?
Everybody on the planet speaks English for the most part. I bet 99% of the planet speaks English. Most of them are bilingual. And yet we as Americans, myself included, feel superior with our mono language skills.
No me gusta.
Yes. Can't help you there.
The Marriage of Figaro, Andrew, is a song that you could pull up for me, because Spike O'Neill's eldest daughter, Ryan, who I have met, who is a sweetheart of a young lady. Remember we were hanging out during Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
And she is as conversational and as loquacious and as charming as her dear sweet father. And unfortunately, she's taken by John or whatever his name is.
But y'all know, you probably may have another half an hour to get your get in there.
Exactly. So here we go.
There you go.
The Marriage of Figaro. So, Spike, what's going on today with your eldest?
Well, first off, I know that we broadcast the station globally. So I'd like to tell John, if you're in New York now listening to the station, turn it off for a few
minutes. I've already ruined it.
Spoiler alert. So my kid, I told you about a couple weeks ago that the young man came to our home and asked for our daughter's hand in marriage.
I heard this.
Right? I mean, I thought those traditions were long, long gone.
Okay, you can kill it.
Sweet,
Andrew.
Sweet kid.
We have enough of this. thank you.
My daughter lived 8 years in New York. It was a really important part of her life. It's where she went from a college student to an adult, and she's in Brooklyn.
It's the concrete jungle where dreams are made of.
There you go. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
I just made that up off
That's
the top of my
really
head.
Good.
Right.
Yeah.
I just made that up.
Well, her boyfriend, my daughter's boyfriend, John, high school, we call him High School John.
There's nothing you can't do.
Yeah.
In New York, I should say.
He's never been there.
Really?
Never been there. And Ryan hasn't been back since she left New York in the height of the pandemic. In the summer of 2020, the pandemic came and wiped out her very good job in New York, had her very good living situation in New York, ripped out from under her. She lived in my basement for a year and a half, yada, yada. So John planned this mystery surprise trip to New York to go see Brooklyn and Manhattan and Coney Island and the whole nine yards. And while there, John's going to he's going to pop the question to my oldest. He's going to give her the ring.
Yeah.
That he had fashioned from the stone I gave her mother when we became engaged.
You told me that the hardest part of that was having to pop open grandma's coffin.
Yeah. Well, Dee tried digging in the dark and quiet. And I'm like, can we get a backhoe? And Melissa's like, no, they'll hear it. Keep digging. And so, well, you know, and here, a tip for you young married fellers out there, right? At 10 years, you upgrade the stone.
Okay.
If she has put up with your guff for 10 years, maybe even give you a couple children, you get her a bigger stone.
So you had that diamond.
We had that. Melissa had a fashion. The truly unpleasant Miss Snow had a fashion to a necklace. So when he asked for Ryan's hand, Melissa went to her jewelry box. Grandma's coffin, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave the stone to the young man who had it put into an engagement ring. And today, probably as we speak, it may be happening as we speak.
Wow.
They're on Coney Island, and he's going to drop to one knee and ask for my daughter's hand in marriage.
That is so sweet.
Are you going to get the call at any time? Are you going to have to run out of here at some point?
No, I'll just weep while trying. I hope we're not talking about something uncomfortable. I weep uncontrollably.
Well, when it happens, you can just interrupt whatever garbage we're talking about.
Cairo news update.
Exactly.
I can't use those anymore.
No, we got in trouble for that.
Breaking news sounder is not to be trifled with, Spike.
So, Spike, how do you feel about your eldest? I mean, this is the first time your child is getting married.
No, it's the last time, Jack. Let's make sure. No, it is the first time. It is the first time. And, you know, it's funny. I feel wonderful about it. He's a great guy. And they're late in the, I mean, Ryan's in her mid-30s. John's 3 years older than her. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it used to be kids were 15, 20 years younger than this when they decided to. That's how life has evolved.
Right.
Where people are starting families later. You know, so
or getting divorced later, or not having any children, later, you know, and being miserable in their very expensive apartment every night.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, and I don't mean to make fun of your trivial or trivialize your misery because I know you're truly unhappy.
Your trivial misery.
You know, trivialize your misery. I am a product of a divorced couple.
Yeah.
You know, I was raised in a divorced home.
Yeah.
And I have no thoughts about ever. There's nothing the truly unpleasant Melissa O'Neill could do. That would cause me to throw it
so
away.
Sweet.
And I hope our daughter has been raised in the same mentality that anything that you have, that you love, that you invest in is worth fighting for. You know, it's worth hanging in there for. I think one of the reasons people are so quick to divorce these days is because no one puts the work in. If things get tough, they just throw it aside and start over. And that's I'm really happy for her. I think he's a great kid.
I think that's super sweet, Spike. Thanks. And as your friend, as your good friend, and as your radio partner, I'm very proud of you for raising such a fine child. And I am very proud of your accomplishment and raising somebody who's healthy enough to engage in that relationship.
Thanks,
you know
buddy.
What I mean?
I appreciate that.
We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Speaking of healthy relationships, former President Donald Trump is having a hard time with those potential jurors as more are getting dismissed. Three of whom have been seated, by the way. That's pretty cool.
That is amazing to me.
Frank Shires asked me to look into John Turley's explanation as to why this trial is a sham.
Oh,
very
really?
Interesting. I got to tell you, Frank Shires had the receipts on this. It's a very, very good argument.
Okay.
Supreme Court seems divided over an obstruction charge in a January 6th case. That may impact the rioters, mayhap, depending on whether or not Clarence Thomas decides to show up for work that day. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.